Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. We are the foreign service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International. My name is Fernando Farias, and we'll be bringing you this show in English for Thursday, January 16, 2025. We'll have the main news of today. And we'll also be sharing music-related content. One is an interview from our archives that was originally carried out in May 2010 in the context of the Buenos Aires Book Fair. Argentine rock journalist Alfredo Rosso came to our studio to introduce the origins of Argentine rock, I mean the first generation of Argentine rockers, to English speakers, and it was a pretty amazing talk that we keep in our library, and it's a pleasure to bring it back to you today because it's timeless and it's very useful for understanding how important Argentina is for the world of Spanish-speaking rock. And we'll have more content related to music, in this case a piece on the presence or visit of international bands in Argentina, historic visits such as Queen, Guns N' Roses and more. Let's get started now with the news, but before that let me remind you that you can contact us by sending emails to qslrai@gmail.com or letters to Maipú Street 555 and then Buenos Aires, Argentina. Both ways are okay for sending reception reports if you are ADXA. We are now ready for the headlines. Here we go. Argentine doctors' degrees are now globally recognized. Cuba, over 500 prisoners released. Salvadoran President Bukele says Trump's return will boost the Bitcoin. Buenos Aires mayor announces massive public spending cuts. Sports, world champion Gonzalo Montiel returns to River Plate. And these are the news. The Argentine government has announced that Argentine doctors will no longer need to validate their degrees abroad. The Ministry of Human Capital revealed that healthcare professionals will now be able to work directly in any country. This decision follows a certification by the World Federation for Medical Education, which confirmed Argentina's National Commission for University Evaluation and Accreditation meets global standards. Previously, Chile and Colombia were the only countries in South America to achieve this recognition. In an official statement, the ministry celebrated the announcement as a testament to Argentina's commitment to academic excellence. In other news, the Cuban government announced the release of over 500 prisoners convicted of various crimes. This move comes after the Biden administration removed Cuba from the list of state sponsors of terrorism. Havana called this decision a step in the right direction, but criticized it as limited. President Miguel Díaz-Canel's government reiterated that the economic war on Cuba continues in reference to the ongoing U.S. embargo. Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele believes Donald Trump's return to the White House will benefit bitcoins. At a press conference, he stated that cryptocurrencies will gain renewed momentum under Trump's second term, starting on Monday. Mr. Bukele argued that the creation of a U.S. Bitcoin reserve will likely lead to exponential revaluation. In September 2021, let's recall, El Salvador became the first country in the world to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. And the mayor of Buenos Aires City announced significant public spending cuts. Jorge Macri revealed plans to save $12 million this year by reducing, merging, or eliminating non-essential state agencies. "We are determined to lower the cost of politics for every Buenos Aires resident," he declared. Aligned with Javier Milei's national policies, Macri highlighted a 10% reduction in political appointments in the city. The local government says the savings are equivalent to the cost of more than 200 police cars. And in sports, defender Gonzalo Montiel has returned to Argentina to rejoin River Plate. Montiel, who played for Seville in Spain, expressed his ambition. "I want to keep winning important titles," he said, quote-unquote. River Plate paid approximately $4.5 million for the transfer. The player cemented his legacy, let's recall, by scoring the decisive penalty in the World Cup final against France, securing Argentina's third star. And these were the news on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior.
Argentine roads. Well, this brings us to the main subject of today's program. We have a special program about Argentine rock explained to foreigners, and we are very pleased to introduce a guest who's joining us today, Alfredo Rosso, a renowned rock journalist who worked in a number of FM stations and AM stations here in Buenos Aires, also in publications of various sorts, and even worked for a time at the BBC, a documentary in 2004. Don't Touch That Dial, is that correct?
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, thank you very much for accepting the invitation, Alfredo.
I'm very pleased to be here and to be speaking about Argentinian rock.
Okay, and we are very pleased to have you here. Tell us something. I mean, when we speak or when we go abroad and speak about Argentina, we market the country from the point of view of tango, or Maradona, mm-hmm. or whatever. Can we say that rock is as important as those items and say Argentina must be known for its rock?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. Rock music in Argentina has been going strong for more than 40 years now. And the important thing is, you know, a couple of years ago, people were thinking, when did it begin? And it actually began in 1966 with some youngsters that got together at a tourist resort called Villa Gesell. Mm-hmm. And they got together to play for their meals, actually. And they started a group called the Beatniks with singer-songwriter Morris. No?
Am I too old if I say that I do remember them?
No, it's all right. He's been around for a while, and his lieutenant, Pajarito Saguri, and they got together as the Beatniks, as I said, and obviously they began playing covers, Beatles covers, but then they started to, you know, develop their own repertoire, and the first song that they composed was called Rebelde, which means the rebel. And I always say that, in my opinion, that is the actual beginning of Argentinian rock, because the lyric of that song goes something like, "People call me a rebel, for rebel is my heart. I am free, but they want to make me a slave to a tradition." So the very idea of getting away from tradition, of being something different from what their parents have been, to be able to pick up a career, a different career from the one that your father had. In those days, it was such a break with custom, because people, you know, you usually dress as your father has dressed.
Sure.
You have the same political ideas. Yeah. You resemble your father in a minute
yeah.
size,
yes.
if you wish. So this song was very important. And at the time, to be labeled as a rebel was something very, very serious.
People would be proud of that.
Right.
It was
right.
cool
yeah,
to
yeah,
be a rebel.
It was cool to be a rebel, but on the other hand, for society to be a rebel, because they called you a rebel when you diverted from the law.
But this can be put in connection with what was going on in other important capitals around the world.
Yes, of course. When Argentinian rock first started, there were, you know, big things happening in the world. You know, in California, youngsters were fighting against the Vietnam War, were rallying against the Vietnam War. A couple of years afterwards, you had the, you know,
French May.
The students out in Paris, in the streets of Paris. So there was an international feeling amongst youngsters that something else was happening, that they were able to do something about their lives, to leave their mark on society. And this is very important, because Argentinian rock was not just foreign rock sung in Spanish. It has its own ideology, and
oh, really?
It has its own thrust. from the very beginning. And it would be interesting if we could play at least a bit of Rebelde by the Beatniks for people to know what it sounded like in the very beginning.
Okay, let's go. I love this song, but I mean, this is not the
No, this is a bit naive, you know. Well, it says that this world is upside down. By being a rebel, maybe we can change it.
Yeah, but isn't it the La Balsa, like the first step in Argentine rock?
I mean, it is in a way, because what happens is that the rebel didn't sell anything, so the group was dropped from the record label. But next year, in 1967. By June, around June, Los Gatos, a group coming from Rosario, from the second city in Argentina, came to Buenos Aires, and they were under a contract with RCA. Nowadays it's Sony BMG. And they recorded The Raft, La Balsa. And all of a sudden it was a crossover hit. What I mean is that it sold 200,000 copies.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot for Argentina in those days. It was incredible. And so people who up to then had said, come on, beat music in Spanish, you must be crazy, they were forced to think twice. And the important thing about La Balsa, The Raft, is that the lyric goes, I am very lonely and sad in this forsaken world. I have an idea to go to my dearest place, but there is something lacking, because I can't go by walking. I will build a raft, and I will go under. I will be shipwrecked. And I was 12, 13 years old at the time, and it defied the logic, because you build a raft to float, not to go under. But then I realized that what it meant is that the country was grey at the time. We were under a
67.
We were under a military rule
of General Longanía.
That's right, very messianic. And so what the song said is, we want a colorful world. We want a colorful sea. We don't mind if we go under this sea of color, this sea of different than the outside world, the world of our elders. So this is very important, because Los Gatos, with the raft La Balsa, set up an example that was followed by many, many youngsters in the following months and years.
Okay, let's hear a little bit of it. Instant classic.
But I believe this still sells.
It does. And I remember in that summer, everybody sang, I have to get my hands on a lot of wood, in order to build up the raft.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the guy who's singing, Lito Nevia, who is still going strong 40 years on as one of the most important representatives of Argentinian rock, was part, as well as Morris, as well as other people, of the generation of La Cueva, which literally means the cave. That was a hole in the wall, a jazz club, which changed, mutated into a rock club. And all these youngsters that shared a common fate, if you wish, a common ideology, they would get out of the club at 3 o'clock in the morning, and instead of going home to sleep, they would keep on going. Keep on going.
Wandering the streets.
Yeah, wandering along the streets. Until they got to the bar La Perla, which is in the neighborhood of Once in Buenos Aires. Why La Perla? Because the bar stayed open all night long. So you had people studying psychology there, students that were preparing for their exams. You had, door-to-door salesmen that were waiting for the first train in the morning to go west and sell their wares. And there was an inner ring with all these musicians. Would-be musicians.
Yeah, absolutely.
People that were part of Los Gatos, former members of Los Beatniks, and also people from Manal and other groups that were formed there. And tradition says that La Balsa, the raft, was composed in the bathroom of that particular club.
There's a legend about that.
Yes, because the bathroom had wonderful acoustics. Everybody sings in the shower.
Wonderful acoustics.
And the waiters were not able to hear what they were playing, so they would not be expelled.
So the way the staff there at La Perla didn't want these guys to be
of course
music.
Not, because they would, they would have a cup of coffee and nothing else for the whole night and stay there.
A cup of coffee for five,
for
maybe.
For five, yes, with little straws.
So La Perla was for the rock people, what Corrientes was for the tango. Was.
Yes, that's definitely true, yes. And there is a plaque there nowadays ascertaining that fact. So finally, after being persecuted by the police for so many years for having long hair and colorful clothes, they were given a sort of the keys to the city after 2-3 decades.
Well.
But anyway, you have to realize that there were many musicians that were very talented at the time, and one of them was Javier Martinez, who was the drummer, the singer, the main composer, and the leader of Manal, a trio. That played, they had a blues bass, but they also mixed with tango and with milonga, because Javier's father was Uruguayan by birth.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of rhythm in his head and jazz music as well. But another important factor about Javier is that he composed lyrics that had a lot to do with Buenos Aires, with the essence of Buenos Aires and the essence of the people of Buenos Aires. And at the time, there was a middle class in Argentina that was going strong, was gaining more and more power in a way. And you had advertisements on TV and on the radio speaking about executives and how to be, in the known, and how to, to buy
things. To
be
a winner.
Yeah, to buy things that would give you prestige. And so he wrote a song telling you how to, how to go forward in life. And the song is called Tomato Juice, Jugo de Tomate. And the lyrics go something like this. The land that gives you life gives you also a time to decide, and by choosing wisely, everybody can be happy. But you must have cold tomato juice in your veins. If you want to be somebody important so that people will talk about you all day, or if you want to become immortal as a hero, assassin, or demigod, you must have cold tomato juice in your veins.
What a great piece.
Que te da la vida, da un tiempo para decidir, eligiendo inteligentemente, todo el mundo podrá ser feliz. Jugo de tomate frío, jugo de tomate frío, en las venas deberás tener. Si quieres ser un terrible vago, todo el día día panza arriba y a dormir. O elegiste ser un tipo capo.
The all-time hit of Manal, Jugo de Tomate Frío.
That's right, and they recorded an album from the first independent label, record label in Argentina that devoted itself 100% for rock music. That was called Mandioca, which is a typical South American fruit. And Manal's album was one of the first in that label. But then another person who recorded for Mandioca was Morris, the former founder of Los Beatniks, now as a solo artist. He recorded an album called 30 Minutes of Life, 30 Minutos de Vida. And you had a song there that typified what was happening at the time. There was a country where you have the military speaking about a future of greatness and trying to, you know, to sugarcoat the pill for people who were having a tough time. And this song, called Only Yesterday, Ayer No Más, Morris sings a lyric by poet and journalist Pipo Lernud that speaks about the other side of things. And the lyric goes like this. Only yesterday they taught me in school that this country is big and has freedom. Today I woke up and saw my bed and my room, and this month I didn't have much to eat. Only yesterday my relatives told me that you must have money to be happy. Today I woke up, I saw my bed and my room. Everything is grey and without sense. People live without believing. And this is very important. There was a huge censorship at the time, a censorship that affected movies, film, books, and also music. So when Los Gatos recorded this song as the B-side of the raft of La Balsa, they had to change the lyrics, sort of, modify the subject, and it became a love song. But this was a protest song at first.
Ayer nomás en el colegio me enseñaron que este país es grande y tiene libertad. Hoy desperté y vi mi cama y vi mi cuarto. En este mes no tuve mucho que comer. Ayer nomás mis familiares me decían que hay que tener dinero para ser feliz. Hoy desperté y vi mi cama y vi mi cuarto. Ya todo es gris y sin sentido. La gente vive sin creer. Ayer nomás vi una chica en mi cuarto. Y la besé sin fundamento. Hoy ya la chica ya no está. Ayer no más.
Ayer no más, a song by Morris. Mauricio Mirabent.
Only yesterday.
Yeah. Well, it's important to notice that the first rockers in Argentina, they were sort of being frowned upon, not only by the police and by the figures of authority, but also by their own parents or by the, parent figures. So at first, the main enemy was, the police, the non-understanding of teachers or whatever. But then there were some poets that went beyond that and created a different kind of poetry for the songs. One of them is obviously Luis Alberto Spinetta with Almendra. He created a sort of magic realism in the realm of music. Also, the music of Almendra was very sophisticated, mixing rock music with jazz and also with tango in some ways. The same did Arco Iris, led by Gustavo Santaolalla, the twice winner of the
Grammy.
Academy Award
for score of music.
Yeah. That's right.
Soundtrack.
And there was also another musician, and singer called Miguel Abuelo, who was formerly a folk musician, but he was, lured into the realm of rock music and became one of the first solo players of mandioca, solo artists of mandioca. And he wrote a song that he recorded for his first single called Oye Niño, Listen Boy. And the important thing about this lyric is that it speaks, it paints a wider picture, because it says, listen, boy, don't give up. Make your head explode. Listen, boy, don't be a fool. Make your head explode. Everything that binds is murderous. Everything that binds is not peace. Listen, boy, don't run anymore. Don't try to beat me. When my name does not exist anymore, you'll see what speed. Cast away your armor now. To be the heir is not to think. This is, I think it's very important, this little phrase that goes, when my name does not exist anymore, you'll see what kind of speed, because we are bound by a name, we are bound by cloth, we are bound by tradition. But then all of a sudden, at a certain point in life, you realize that you're an individual, that you are unique. And when you realize that, when you cast away the name that they've given you, there is no way to stop you. Then you acquire speed. This is one of the most beautiful things that there are many ways to read into Miguel Abuelo's lyrics.
Later,
he was a poet.
He was a big poet.
Yeah. And later to become the leader of a huge band.
So that's true. Los Abuelos de la Nada, that had two life
spans. Yeah.
In the 60s, in the early 60s, and then in the 80s when they became huge. But I would like to listen to a bit of Listen Boy.
Okay.
Satisfechos al haber comprado sus derechos, bronca cuando se hacen moralistas y entran a correr a los artistas, bronca cuando a plena luz del día sacan a pasear su hipocresía.
Well, this actually is la marcha, the march of wrath.
Yeah, wrath or rage or whatever you want. This is Pedro y Pablo, which is a duo, also from the early 70s. And it was very interesting because they sang songs for Buenos Aires, speaking about the routine of the employees that goes to the office every day, who work from 9 to 5 and forget about the sun, and they forget about what they want to be in life, because they have to, you know, to clock in and clock out and to follow this fixed set of
rules or
duties day after day. But this song was a protest against the government of Onganía at the time, and it goes, rage when they laugh satisfied after they have bought their rights, rage when they play the moralist and start persecuting the artists, rage when in plain daylight they parade their hypocrisy, rage, real rage, my rage. Rage that you can sing about. For those who take away what is ours with the glove they use to conceal. For the one who pulls the string of the universal puppet.
India, China,
rage
Iceland,
because they kill
Morocco,
with
England.
Impunity.
These
but
are
nothing
but a few
ever
arise
becomes
many
clear.
Ports of call. The international service of the Argentine radio.
Okay, let's have a treat on the air. And talk about our foreign bands, international bands, bands that I'm sure that you know about, bands that came to Argentina. Usually when we talk about Argentine music, I have to introduce the music, the songs, to you out there, wherever you're listening to my voice, because, well, I have to assume that you're not familiar with most of the artists on our playlist, because they're Argentine artists, and if you're in India, Canada, I don't know, South Africa, it might be that you are not familiar with the Carabajal or with Divididos or, I don't know, with Polaco Goyeneche. But today we'll talk about groups that everybody knows, international groups. And we're going to focus on rock, hard rock, heavy, bands that came to Argentina. Because we've got some recordings, and thanks to the wonders of internet, now you have access to a number of things. Now, what is special about Argentina? Why are we doing this? Because
many foreign artists, when they come to Argentina, they notice the way the people react to shows, and they notice that it's a more passionate experience by the audience, to an extent in which the audience becomes part of the show, in a much more real way. And that's what we are going to be exploring. Some bands actually took advantage of this and recorded live albums in Argentina. The first group, the first international rock group to come to Argentina was Queen. In 1981, they performed on March the 1st, 1981, in Vélez Sarsfield Stadium. This was a very, very rare concert during the dictatorship and before the first bands ever came. It was nothing short of historic. Incredible, 34 years later, Queen came to Argentina. They performed here in Argentina just a couple of weeks ago with this new singer. They have actually, you know, without John Deacon, they are not calling themselves Queen. They're calling Queen plus Adam... I can't even recall the operator. Jorge can't recall. And no disrespect, but next to Freddie Mercury, I don't know if I want to remember the name of the singer. No disrespect, I have some people who went there, but really, if there's one singer that can't be replaced in rock, is Freddie Mercury. And I think that John Deacon gave that reason for not continuing with Brian May and Roger Taylor. But well, it's not about the present, it's about the past. It's about that concert in 1981. Very few people attended. It was the first time that Argentina had an international gig coming to do a concert in Argentina during the dictatorship. It was a very rare thing that would not be repeated for several years until the mid-1980s, when there was a series of concerts in River Plate Stadium with Sting, with Peter Gabriel, that came to Argentina. But Queen were the first. It was during that tour in South America that the band got impressed by the passion of the Latin American audience, and they penned a song that was later released dedicated to Latin American fans, a song fully entitled in Spanish, Las Palabras de Amor, The Words of Love. That was inspired by their Latin American experience, and I am sure the Argentine chapter was very important for the band. Now, next on the list, we are fast-forwarding 11 years to October 30, 1992, at the peak of their fame, 1 year after releasing what was going to be the album of the decade, together with Machine Head, perhaps, of Radiohead, Nirvana played in Argentina at Vélez Sarsfield Stadium, and this was one of the highlights of that show. Every day for all I care, all I scared. Nirvana playing Lithium. This is from October 30th, 1992, recorded at Vélez Sarsfield Stadium here in Buenos Aires. They were touring to support Nevermind, that historic album. And the concert was not a very good one because of a particular event that everybody remembers, everybody who was in attendance, including this host. Nirvana had brought with them a band they sponsored, an all-girl band called Calamity Jane. The concert was opened by a local gig, Los Brujos, which is now a cult band, and then Calamity Jane. They were not welcomed by the Argentine audience that were desperate to see Nirvana. They started throwing things at Calamity Jane. All sorts of things, from sandwiches to bottles to spitting at them, up to a point in which the lead singer just dropped her guitar, insulted the audience, justified to do so, in my opinion, and she walked off the stage. And when Nirvana came on the stage, they took revenge at the Argentine audience. They delivered a very cold performance, and the worst thing is that they didn't play Smells Like Teen Spirit, which was the album opener and the song that everybody wanted to listen to. Not only that, but they played the first chords of the song, people went crazy, and then they stopped and they did not play that song that everybody wanted to listen to. A year later, the biggest band of the moment, together with Nirvana, they were also having their heyday, Guns N' Roses. They came to Argentina first time in 1992, December. And barely 7 months later, in July 1993, they performed again at River Plate Stadium, two concerts. And this was the concert opener that day.
Horn Ring Circus presents Guns N' Fucking Roses! We'll be right back.
Night Train by Guns N' Roses live at River Plate Stadium. That's July 1993. They were at the peak of their global fame, barely 7 years after releasing their debut album, Appetite for Destruction. This is the tour, the very long tour in support of their double album, Use Your Illusion. They came to Argentina twice in less than 7 months. And the historic thing about this concert you're listening to is that it was the last time the Guns N' Roses with the historic lineup played. July 1993 with Matt Sorum, with Duff McKagan, Slash and Axl Rose together. That was the last time they played together on stage, all these musicians. And then Guns N' Roses went into that very long hiatus that would last 15 years until they released a new album. If you remember that same year, they released that cover album called The Spaghetti Incident. Then Slash left the band. And for 10 years, they didn't play again until I think it was in the early noughties that Axl Rose brought the band together with all new musicians. Only Dizzy Reed, the keyboard player, was a survivor from the old era, and a new age begun with the release in 2008 of their follow-up album, Chinese Democracy. But everybody agrees that the band has never been the same without that original lineup that played for the last time here in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Okay, let's get a little bit heavier with a trash band that is practically a local band. And when I say a local band, is because they come here as often as possible. Like the Ramones. The Ramones is a band that in 1986 chose Buenos Aires because of the number of fans they had here to disband. They gave their final concert in 1986 here in Buenos Aires. And Megadeth is another band that became almost Argentine. Basically, because of what happens with Argentine fans, pay attention, you'll be able to pay attention to what happens when Argentine fans sing along Symphony of Destruction. Do you listen to what the audience is saying? Megadeth, aguante Megadeth. This is an Argentine expression. Aguante is like, go forward Megadeth, or long live Megadeth. They sing along the riff of the song, and that happened the first time the band played in Argentina in 1994. It became a classic for Megadeth when they come to Argentina, which they do very often. People love them. And if you pay attention, Dave Mustaine, the band's leader, left a few bars at the beginning for the people to do that. That is already part of the song here in Argentina. You can't think of the riff without adding the lyrics, Aguante Megadeth, which is the Argentine version of it. Now, let's move on to bands that have recorded live albums, official live albums, here in Argentina because of that. There are several that have done that. The Rolling Stones included a live track recorded during their Bridges to Babylon tour in 1988 here in River Plate Stadium, Saint of Me. If you've got the No Security album, well, Saint of Me was recorded here in Argentina, and you can listen to the crowd at the end of the track. Iron Maiden, the heavy metal band from Britain, they recorded a live album, was the soundtrack of a film, if you remember, Flight 666. They went around the world recording songs, and that album includes a track here in Buenos Aires, which is Fear of the Dark. Maiden are coming again to Argentina next March 2016. They're performing at Vélez Sarsfield Stadium. They performed the last time in 2013 in River Plate in a concert that was a disaster in terms of the sound. A very bad sound. It left a bad memory in everybody in attendance, including yours truly. So many of us who are Maiden fans are waiting for a second for a new chance to listen to the band with a better sound than the one of River Plate. And speaking of River Plate, let us sign off this little section dedicated to rock and heavy metal and hard rock bands in Argentina to the biggest pride of all, because these, one of the biggest bands in the world, came to record a full live album in Buenos Aires, in Argentina. They had come the first time to the country in 1996. 13 years later, they came for the second time to River Plate Stadium, and they recorded a full live album called Live at River Plate, AC/DC.
Thank you.
Wow, everybody has been there, and I wasn't the one, among them. Tells me that it was unforgettable, and you can see that on this film that anybody can watch. It's available on YouTube, live at River Plate Stadium, and you can see the way the crowd reacts. There are clips that you can find on YouTube, Argentina best crowd in the world. And you can find Eddie Vedder, for example, of Pearl Jam, surprised, awestruck by the reaction of the people singing the guitar parts and telling the audience, next time it's me who should be paying you rather than you paying the tickets, because you are the show rather than us on the stage. Well, that was AC/DC live at River Plate, Highway to Hell. We shared some performances by international groups that came down to Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Rai, Argentina's history and you.
And this way we come to the end of today's program of Rai, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior in English for Thursday, January 16, 2025. My name is Fernando Farias, and I'd like to thank you very much for listening to this program that is aired via the shortwaves of WRMI Miami Radio International and also via internet on rai.com.ar. Thank you for listening, and hasta la próxima.